This is the Authentic Persuasion Show. Hey, what's going on, everybody? Jason Cutter here, Authentic Persuasion Show. Welcome to part two of my conversation with Jeff Arduino from Spectrum Retirement Communities. He is a national director of sales for them. They have over 44 locations, probably exactly, 9 states, a whole bunch of people selling in person, over the phone, long sales cycles. If you didn't catch it, make sure to check out part one, where we talked a lot about the sales process, technology, things like that. But here we go. Jeff, welcome to part two, the after show of the Authentic Persuasion Show.
Thanks, Jason. Great to be back.
So I almost didn't hit record. I almost got excited and talked to you like I do with every guest. I just love the conversation. Again, thing that's so fascinating about what you do is you're managing this process that's in person, over the phone, long sales cycle, and again, thinking about what that would be like for salespeople, where literally they're in the same space as somebody else for as long as they want to be in that career, and what that would do, which I think is amazing. One part that you mentioned is secret shopping. Now, for a conference, and then as part of a research that I want to do, and really also to help companies understand it, I actually went through a process of secret shopping over 100 individual companies by submitting forms on their website, and it was in financial services, debt relief, credit repair, things like that, but really see how it is. And I got that idea from someone in the senior care space prepping for the Smash conference that I spoke at last year. And the value of that secret shopping and understanding like what's actually happening. How often do you do that? And what are some of the insights that you've learned from doing that? And who's doing it? Is it you? Is it other managers, leaders? Like walk us through that process. And then the why and the what.
Yeah. So we, you know, have retained an outside group called Primo Solutions to assist us in this. We've been doing shops on a quarterly basis. I think just like we talked about on part one, if folks recall the staffing crisis that we're up against, it's hard for them to find mystery shoppers to go out and do this. And I think in particular for our space, where there's still some reluctance around things kind of post-COVID with the pandemic, where because of things that happened early on with nursing homes, everything has kind of been labeled under this kind of umbrella that, ooh, stay away. So it's been a challenge to find that in the last 2 years, but typically we do quarterly. We do it right out of the gate with brand new sales folks coming in, so that within those first, you know, really 60 days or so, you figure out what's actually happening. What are the challenges? What are they up against? How are they coming off to folks? Part of the challenge with secret shopping is creating a report card and doing a mystery shop is we want to touch on all these points. And again, going back to part one, finding a balance between checking the boxes and having it be authentic and organic in those moments. And so we have scoring rubrics and those kind of things. You know, did they use their name? Did they mention these features and benefits, which have an evaluation, but I think what we really look for are the comments from the shoppers. You know, when I came into the community, I felt X way. Looking around, this is the experience that I had. When she said such and such, this is how it made me feel. And I think that's the kind of intangible stuff that is really impactful for us. Like you said, when you were doing your mystery shops in the financial space, starting from the form, that's how we do it as well. We go from the digital standpoint, so requesting information online, does it just go to a black hole? Which is what happens a lot with, for better or worse, still our sales folks. And for me, when I shop competition and I do it all over the country on a regular kind of ad hoc basis, it's what I experience. I tend to be the nasty customer because I can't imagine what it feels like for a family to have that be the case, right? You're searching for something that is critical, it's timely, it's emotional, connected to your loved one needing care, and you send your stuff out into the ether and the internet and nothing comes back. You get an auto response maybe that says, someone will be with you shortly. And 3 days later, maybe someone reaches out and says, hey, would you like to come in? I don't know. I'd still like to know what it costs, what's involved, all these different things. So when we do it, it starts there, it then goes to a phone call, and then the in-person experience. So we kind of look at those three aspects. And I think one of the inherent limitations of mystery shopping is it's always going to move forward, right? No matter how bad the experience goes, if no one got in touch with me, our mystery shopper is still going to have to pick up the phone and call, even if the email never comes. And so I think for us, it shows us where those gaps are, because we know that those folks probably aren't going to pick up the phone if they didn't get that initial response to the web form, right? So there's a little bit of artificiality there that we just kind of acknowledge, but it does tell us where those breakdowns are. You know, in addition to using a service, we do it internally as well. There's been times where it's like, something is just not clicking at this property. So we might pick up the phone, call on a weekend and see what's going on. Do we have sufficient coverage? You know, are things going straight to voicemail? Is our team leaving early for the day? All those kind of things where we just learn through those kind of interactions what's happening. And then, like I mentioned in part one regarding like the sales calls that we record, instead of just, hey, providing feedback, here's what's good, bad, and indifferent, just handing it over to our sales teams and saying, here's the shop. Here's what a, you know, a third party unbiased thought about their experience with you. Absorb that. Let's talk about it. Because I think, again, they can be more critical of themselves than we ever could be. And they're more likely to see things in the process that maybe we didn't. We're like, no, it didn't really go like that. Or, you know what, you're right. When they said that, I didn't know how to respond. And they're able to kind of self-diagnose in a way that's really meaningful. But yeah, it's an important part of the process for us and something we do iteratively, like I said, every quarter just to keep it fresh.
I think that's great. It's interesting from the research that I did, like the experiment and going through the process, just over 65% of the companies never called us once. And I wasn't as nice as you where I was artificially moving things forward. I wanted to see how they did. If out of 100, how many reached out to us once? How many reached out to us twice? And then after two times, we would then return a call and then see how many actually answered when we called back. And the numbers just got incrementally smaller, like worse and worse and worse as he went along. Like even when we called people, 35% never answered when we called them back. I think you got that warm person who's responding. So I love that you go through that process and really look at that and analyze it, because I think one of the challenges I see, companies have the good best intentions, they build good processes, it all works on paper, and then they don't inspect what they expect and they just assume it's all working and they move on to put out other fires or to grow other things or deal with another challenge, and they just assume, well, we had a meeting and we built this thing so it should be working, right? Like all of that stuff should go through. And I love that you don't just assume that, right? You're like, all right, let's just see how this works. And then, of course, you know, secret shopping other companies and seeing how that goes. I'm sure that's insightful. For you, one of the things that you mentioned before we set this up was something you called platform burnout, right? We're talking about systems and processes and putting things in place. You're very tech forward, like this sounds great on paper, but one of the things I know that can happen, I love that phrase I'd never heard of, which is platform burnout. Can you explain that and kind of, you know, how that fits into what you do and don't do with and to your employees?
Yeah, absolutely. One of the things about being kind of tech forward is it's a double-edged sword, right? We get so much from it, and sometimes we can get analysis paralysis from all the data that's incoming, and what do you do with it? But I mentioned we were offline, just hired two brand new regional sales support folks, and both of them within their first 2 weeks are like, well, you have a lot of platforms. So between the CRM and call tracking, we've got text features, we've got a video platform, we have the business side and the real estate side. I mean, like we use a single sign-on service and I've got about 50 icons of different things. And some of it talks to each other and some of it does not. And I think for someone who's brand new, kind of coming into this space as a salesperson, if their experience itself, they're just like, turn me loose, right? Show me the phone, team me up, let me go, I want to go. And it's like, well, yeah, but you've got to do it in this way through these channels. And they're like, oh, well, I'm not going to do that. And I think once they realize how, and I think that's the biggest thing, showing them the why behind it. Here's why we use these things. One of them, our CRM, you actually dial from that, right? You hop on there, push button, calls your desk phone, you pick it up. That way we're tracking the calls. You're not having to enter, you know, duplicative information into a CRM. And people go, well, that seems like more steps than it's actually worth. And then when you can show them, here's how it saves time. That's when we start to see compliance with that kind of thing and people actually engaging in the process. With things like video platforms, getting them to, well, I've got it on my laptop, now I've got it on the cell phone, I have to have it in six different places. And again, it's about trying to pare it down to what's the bare essentials, what are the parts that matter. And to your point about inspecting what you expect, for a sales leader like an executive director in our communities, taking the time to get in there and actually look at what's going on, pay attention to the platforms, can be challenging as well because they have 12 other things they've got to look at in different platforms, because our business, you know, we have nursing and food and beverage and maintenance and all these things in addition to sales and programming. So they're trying to monitor five or six different departments with various platforms. And so honestly, the biggest thing is just like setting it an intention. Here's a calendar invite for myself. This is a 30 minutes a day. I'm going to go in and look at everything that's going on, make sure that I'm caught up. And I think within the senior living space, it is, as we talked about, I think in part one, a little old school, a little conservative because of who we project our clientele to be. And I think more often than not, because of that projection, that tends to be who we attract from a recruitment standpoint. And I think more often than not, it's our own team members who are technology and change averse and not our residents. You know, we've had some great moments on social media. You can check out our TikTok page where we've got residents, you know, in their 70s, 80s, and 90s embracing trends on TikTok and showing us what's cool right now. And some of our sales teams and frontline team members are like, I don't TikTok. So, you know, it's that thing where as long as we're challenging the convention and pushing it forward, we find that if you embrace it, there's going to be payout on the backside. But part of it is really showing them, here's how it makes a difference. Otherwise, yeah, they're just going to kind of throw up their hands or just malicious compliance. I'm in there, but just to show you that I was there. That's all.
Yeah. Malicious compliance. I've never heard that phrase. I learned so much doing this podcast. People are like, how do you not know that? Like, there's just, different phrases, but malicious compliance, amazing. I think the biggest thing that I have found, and I took from what you were just talking about too, is helping people understand the why, right? Even if you have multiple platforms, it's helping your team understand, why do we have this? Why do we do this? Why is this important? And why is this going to help you succeed? When the right people on board with the right cultural fit understand and agree with the why, then there is no burnout, right? Then there is no resistance. There is no malicious compliance because they are on board. They understand why, and they understand why the ship is going where the ship is going, right?
Yep. You got it.
All right. So one last question. I would be completely remiss if I didn't bring up this one topic that you may or may not be expecting, because anyone that knows me and my bachelor's degree knows that it also doesn't make any sense at all with what I do. Talk about your bachelor's and what it is in, and then short version of how you got to be the master of senior care and sales in the space that you're in.
Yeah, my undergraduate degree is in film studies, and you know, thought at the end of the 90s that I wanted to go to Hollywood, be involved in film, and wrote a bunch of screenplays as a teenager, and thought that's where my heart kind of lay, and loved the experience that I had, spent a bunch of time in Los Angeles. That space is really not for me, but found that connecting with people has always been that thing. And so getting out of college, thought I was going to be a ski bum for a couple years, moved up to the mountains, and then found myself very quickly embroiled in real estate because this was a peak real estate boom. This is like 03, 04, and came in working for real estate settlement, title side, lending. And then when everything went belly up, found I had to do something. And someone took a chance on me to bring me into the senior living space. I had some sales and lead generation background working in escrow and connecting with realtors and kind of attracting business that way. And started off in a small senior community, you know, doing everything from driving the bus and leading activities to cleaning the hot tub, and still at some point making calls, doing tours, and moving people into the community. And ever since then, just took some of that same background of, the visual aesthetic, connecting with social media, and just trying to find a way to connect with others that, you know, I couldn't express myself through art in the way that I kind of hoped to. And I think more so it's about just this. It's about connecting with people and finding that way. So that's how I got here. Probably would have been like you. I, at my core, I'm probably a frustrated marine biologist as well, living in a landlocked state. If there's a nature doc about anything under the sea or out in space, that's totally my vibe. So, yeah, I love your backstory. And I think that's what we find, right, is that we fall into things we're supposed to fall into, and things happen for a reason. And I'm looking at two of our top folks coming out of the gate right now, and they have nothing to do with the space. One is brand new, also came from a lending background, and has seen that he's been working in the mortgage world, and is like, guys, things are getting ready to change this year. And he's like, I need to find something a little more stable and that I feel like I'm making a difference. And so he's come on with us in 60 days and blown it out of the water. Another one came from like real estate beauty sales, running spas and salons, selling, you know, wholesale to retailers from beauty supply line. And she's like our perfect adult daughter demographic and just killing it, but never would have thought that senior living sales would have been in the future for either one of them. So we find the things that draw us in, and that's where we stick it out.
And I think that's amazing, and I think it's interesting to look at our parallels. And then I think there's some value to people who don't have experience in an industry coming in with other experiences, but not a preset idea of, oh, here's what I've always done in senior care, right? It's instead, here's how I've dealt with people, here's what I know on building relationships, and let me apply that to what you do. And I think sometimes from a hiring standpoint, that's better, because then you don't have to retrain somebody. You can just use what they're good at. But I love that. I just imagine you in Colorado being a frustrated marine biologist. And then it's funny thinking you entered real estate same time I entered real estate in the mortgage business in 2002 in that same era. And, you know, where those things kind of come together and go apart. So I think that's amazing. Jeff, thanks for being here on part two. Part one was amazing. For anyone tuning in, make sure to get watch, listen, check out part one. We went through a lot of great stuff. I know, Jeff, for people, it'll be in the show notes for people who want to reach out to you. They can find you on LinkedIn, Jeff Arduino, A-R-D-U-I-N-O. See, I'm getting better and better at it. and then if you want to, anyone who wants to find out more about the work that you do, the communities that you're a part of, you know, with your company, SpectrumRetirement.com. Again, Jeff, thank you for your generosity and what you shared, and you know, all the stuff that you're doing with your teams and for your communities, which I know is not easy, but I appreciate everything you're doing and sharing with the audience.
Thanks, Jason. It's been a real pleasure, and looking forward to connecting again in October at LeedsCon too.
Yes, I can't wait for that. Be on stage. We'll chat more about this. Obviously, anyone who's tuning into this, if it's not yet middle-ish October when you're hearing or watching this, and you're in the D.C. area, you're going to that conference, great. If not, we're going to have fun. It will be amazing, and I appreciate that. And for everyone tuning in, watching, again, make sure to check out part one. We covered a lot of great stuff. Thank you for being a part of this conversation, whether you're tuning in to the podcast or YouTube or LinkedIn, wherever that might be. Selling with Authentic Persuasion.